Peace, folks. Welcome to yet another episode of In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about true people's liberation movements and revolution. I am your host, Raven. I use she, her pronouns, and today we are hopping on just to real quickly speak about some of the ongoing events and updates happening in Palestine, but also to point once again to the way in which many of us are responding to these things that are happening around the world, to speak about some of the feelings of dread, of regret, of fear. 126, 127, what is it now? It's more than that. 128, 129 plus days into an ongoing genocide, which every single part has been openly and actively displayed, documented, cited, sourced, videotaped, photographed, written down, spoken about, translated, and brought to our eyes, the viewership, for, in a way, consumption. Of course, I don't think that that is the intention of producing this material, but I do see that I myself, and a lot of us fall into this pit of, I guess what you could call, like, trauma porn. And before I really dive into it, I just want to say a few things. First of all, this is not a condemnation or a feeling of contempt towards anyone who, you know, is doing what they're doing, what they feel is necessary to protect themselves and to also protect those around them in these moments. But it is to say that there comes a moment, multiple moments, actually, in each one of our lives where we have to make a decision about what is important to us. What do we care about? What do we put our energy into? And most importantly, as you know, I and many others have continued to, you know, really hit on, what is it that we are willing to sacrifice? More and more I find myself being a absolutely hypocritical, childish, scared little brat who doesn't want to sacrifice any of her comfort, well-being, pleasure, even for small things. Like, I'll give an example. Last night, I went to a great show. A friend of mine, Valentine, shout out Valentine. She was hosting a little Valentine's Day, like, show in her home at Love Studios. So we got to go out, and that was a wonderful time. That is not something I normally do. Ever since COVID, and it's it's funny because me and my partner actually had to talk about this on the way to the show. Ever since COVID, like, I really changed. I never used to have a problem like I do being in crowded spaces, being in loud spaces. But I think the, you know, lockdown period and my personal fears of sickness and in many ways of other people really developed and advanced further during the last 3-4 years. And, you know, I have a friend, very good friend, very lovely friend, Valentine, who does a great job putting on these shows, producing music, having people over, really developing a space of love and compassion. It's obviously also like an anti-imperialist, like, revolutionary space. You know, there were signs of no justice, no peace. We talked about what we heard in some of Valentine's own songs about, you know, one of the intros has a recording of someone who I believe is like in an interview about like selling drugs. And they say, you know, the rich get richer and the poor are just looking for a way to get high. We're just looking for a way to escape. And, you know, Reagan, I think it says in the recording, Reagan is really the ultimate plug for drug dealers, for liquor producers, all over the place. Because, you know, like, obviously things weren't exactly good for the majority of human history, and especially for the majority of history of oppressed people within the United States. But the level of drug use and alcoholism, right, addiction, etc., really took off in the late 70s, 80s, due to, of course, many different programs like the Iran-Contra scandal, the production of crack cocaine from that, which eventually made its way to Ricky Ross, thanks to handlers in the CIA who helped to smuggle drugs and guns from the Contras. And also because since the 80s, we see many different statistics, many different examples to show that wealth and production have continued to increase and in fact skyrocketed in many places. And yet at the same time, in those last 40 or so years, wow, my math is great this morning, you have only, on average, about a 15% wage increase. And yet you have a 1,029% wage increase for CEOs, and you have an over 500% production increase in that same time. So of course people are going to start turning to drugs. Of course people are going to... I'm smoking right now. Because as it stands, it's cheaper and easier to go out and buy something that's going to get you high than it is to worry about feeding yourself, paying your bills, going to work. It's easier to just get high. And it might seem silly, but you don't need to eat. You don't need to focus on your health. You don't need to go to a job when you're just fucking high or drunk all the time. It's very easy. You know, unfortunately, I've fallen into this as a part of a family who many of us have struggled with addiction and also with depression and anxiety and PTSD. I, you know, personally have come to use weed specifically as a medicine of sorts, but more than anything, it has become also a crutch. You know, I am definitely addicted to smoking weed, not because my body per se is craving it in the same way that you crave methamphetamine or cocaine, but my brain has gotten so used to just tolerating and moving through any situation because I'm just stoned, then like being able to handle difficult and complex situations, to be able to be sober. Like, I haven't been 100% sober in over a decade. To like dive back into that reality, it scares me. It makes my brain like go into overdrive. I get overstimulated, overwhelmed very easily. And it's because my brain has gotten to a point where it's like, I just need to chill. And life isn't chill. So, Yeah, it all brings us to the general point and the expanded discussion that I want to have, which is that right now we are at a particular point in historical development that is really unlike any other. And what I mean by that is we have more technology, more advanced tools of documentation, of production, of consumption. We have more visibility, more information about anything, any place, any person, than really any of us could ever consume. That is something that breaks my heart. I don't know about y'all, but I'm someone who loves to learn. And the fact that there's so many things I will never learn and never know. It's cool, but it also kind of breaks my heart. I want to know everything. But more than that, I want to stop just consuming information. I've spoken about this before. I continuously fall into this tendency where I sit in front of my laptop or I sit on my phone and I just consume information. Whether that's going through the Telegram channels and the videos of genocide and of resistance that is happening in Palestine, whether that's reading an article or watching a documentary, I'm like constantly enveloping myself in these histories, in these peoples, in these information, in this information, and yet not actively using it or turning it into action, right? And I think this has become a problem that a lot of us are seeing and a lot of us are participating in when it comes to social media and the consumption of these videos of children, women, elderly folks being abused, being shot, being tortured, crying for their family, seeing the buildings being blown up, seeing the absolute torture and abuse that the IDF and the settlers are continuing to participate in against the Palestinian people. And we just, I think it was Motez who had said it. He was like, why would I want you to like this post? I want you to do something about it. I want you to share it. I want you to talk about it. But even that, we've seen social media really become a disabling tool when it comes to movements and real grassroots energy. Because I'm sure some of you who have joined organizations have experienced this, right? As soon as y'all get a little name together and you figure out, okay, this is what we would like to do, whatever the objective is, now y'all go, okay, what social media are we going to create? How are we going to, post about this? How are we going to talk about this? And I do think that it is important to have that social media presence, to be affecting that algorithm and to be putting that content out there. But when we see how people have either chosen to mute and ignore any and all imagery of what is happening in Palestine, what is happening in the Congo, what is happening in Western Sahara, or they have made the decision that, like myself in a way, my entire social media presence is now about this. And it's very helpful in a way to have an outlet, to be able to post about it, to be able to have a community of sorts to talk to about these things. But it's almost as if we really do see posting as a form of organizing, as a form of resistance. And I guess if you really, really boiled it down, what is resistance, right? Any and all action which goes against the status quo is a form of resistance. But if we talk about the tactical success of certain, you know, actions, we can see that posting actually just leads to more posting. We see that many of us who are on social media find ourselves all consumed with it, find ourselves needing to respond to every comment, needing to set correct every single person, becoming very emotionally affected by the stress, the dopamine hits, but also the fear of controversy, of, you know, criticism, and having to deal with that publicly in a space like social media, where you're not talking face to face, you're not talking person to person. You're both typing from your ego onto a keyboard. And all of that combined with the fact that a lot of us really would rather just sit at home and scroll on social media than even go out and join a demonstration or talk to our neighbors, right? This is a self-criticism here. We become comfortable with this. We become sustained by this. And we become dependent on this form of existence. Now, I don't want anyone to feel like they shouldn't be posting, but the question really becomes, what are we spending our time and energy on? And is it resulting in the changes and the progression that Palestinians need to see? Or is it just the most easy, comfortable, passive form of resistance, participation? Recently, let me actually hold on here. Recently, I've really been struggling with a lot of questions of self, a lot of questions of identity. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, and it's certainly not my idea, but something that I heard is because of neoliberalism, right, the period of the late 80s, early 90s, the fall of the socialist camp to today, where social programs were destroyed, education was destroyed, where healthcare was destroyed, any resemblance of or remnants of quote unquote rights are being completely eroded, and every single person who is being born, who is coming into this world, who is coming into the workforce, right, it has less and less opportunities, has less and less ability to really develop themselves. Not only through just the means of accumulating wealth, but because we are so worried about how extremely and increasingly more difficult times are becoming for people, even here in the imperialist core, we are not turning to a solution which resolves the problem. Many of us are forced into, you know, doing some kind of gig work or getting a second job or having a side hustle, right? And these things really take up the time, especially in our early formative years, of developing self. And so we begin to almost brand ourselves. And rather than developing characteristics, personalities, behaviors, thoughts, ideas through experience, we do so through the consumption of an attachment to ourselves of certain media, certain characters, certain individuals who are on our screens. we look at a movie and we say, who reminds you of me? Who am I? Right? We tie certain identity characteristics to ourselves as supplements for real personality, right? Like many of us who have gone through transitioning have struggled with the balance between being trans as a part of us and being trans as our whole identity, right? The same thing goes for a lot of different people who have a hobby or an interest, right? If you know someone who likes cats, shout out to my sister, Kristen. If you know someone who likes cats, guess what? Every single birthday, every single holiday, every single time somebody sees something that is related to cats, they are going to give it to this person as if that is the whole of this person. That them liking cats, or them liking One Piece, or them liking baseball, right, is their whole selves. And in a way, I do feel that's because we really do not have any sense of self. We are so insecure. We are so unaware of who we are within the context of the life that we live. And we struggle to break away from and rebuild ourselves outside of the environment and the reality that we come from. Many of us remain idle or passive in the identities that we were given or the communities that we were brought up in as a child. Many of us don't do the self-work, myself included, to really break away fully from the negative, reactionary, and harmful behaviors, ideas, and identities that we hold on to. We put ourselves in boxes, and we really limit ourselves. We're very short-sighted, and we don't really do the, like, existential self-investigation. We don't do the, like, what, you know, someone staying in a log cabin and just reading and writing and, like, getting to know oneself. We don't have the time. Who can rent a log cabin? Who has a vacation period? Like, so instead, we sit at work, we sit at home, and we scroll on social media, we consume TV, we watch YouTube, we watch movies, and that becomes how we personify ourselves. That becomes the images and the content that forms a foundation to us as human beings. And by doing so, we really remove humanity from everything that we're doing. The point that I'm trying to make is we are basing ourselves off of content which is made for us by people who do not see any need to take the millions and billions of dollars they are spending and put it towards actually helping people. You will have a movie about Fred Hampton, but you will not have any sort of support or any kind of developments that will lead towards people actually seeing and receiving the revolutionary changes that Fred Hampton spoke about and worked towards and organized around. You'll have a movie come out about, you know, young trans kids and the struggles that they go through in high school, but you won't have any in-depth further analysis embedded in that. It will just be, you know, a coverage of a very real form of trauma and bullying that a lot of us experience with no resolve, with no conclusive answers. Maybe the individual has things work out for them. You know, maybe they get the significant other they were looking for, or they get the job, or they move where they wanted to go, right? Their dreams come true. But that is individualizing that success. This success was attained by this character because they did these things. You don't have that success because A, you're not that character and you don't live in a movie. But you're meant to feel like you don't have the certain kind of happy, better life that characters in a movie or a TV show have. The friendships, the experiences, the times that they have together. Because it's supposed to be your fault. You're supposed to believe that it's you that's doing things wrong. Oh, if only I was more like this person in this show. Or if only I had the confidence of so-and-so in this anime, right? And then we almost try to make ourselves these characters in order to cultivate, you know, courage, secureness, etc. But it's empty. And it's sad. Because whatever security you think you're developing, you're in fact eroding. Because now, yet again, we are attaching ourselves to a characteristic, an identity, as if we are brands, as if we are characters in some form of media. But we are human beings. The only way that we can fully develop and personify and evolve is through collectivity. It's through experience. And most importantly, it's through struggle. Nobody gets to a better place through no effort at all, except for those who are in power, have privilege and wealth to be able to be placed or moved into these positions, to go through these experiences that allow them some opportunity to develop and improve themselves, which many don't take. But those of us who do not have these opportunities, those of us who do not have these resources, we also don't have the real concrete moments and experiences that help us to see who we are and help us to really get to who we want to be. Because I got to be to work tomorrow, you know? And I got all these people blowing up my comment section. And, you know, I got this new movie coming out that I want to go see. It's like, okay, you know, I'm beating a dead horse at this point. Bringing it now to the question of Palestine, right? And how many of us are responding to this. Right now, there are over 1.5 million people living, if they are lucky, in tents, in the middle of the cold, through rain, through all kinds of weather conditions that are not suitable for human life, outside, all contained in a very compressed area that's even smaller than Gaza. This was the largest concentration camp, Gaza Strip. Now they're just in Rafah and a few other, you know, areas along the way. Right now, 1.5 or more million people have no electricity, have no food, have very little, if any, hospitals. The roads are destroyed, the buildings are destroyed, the schools are destroyed. The safe places that they're told that they can travel are bombed. Ambulances are bombed. Schools and places where civilians are bunkering down are bombed. Hospitals are bombed, circled, shot at. And yet, when you see these videos, right, there's a sense of determination. There's a sense of, or an idea, that this will come to an end, that occupation will end. We don't have that here. Many of us who have grown up here, have lived here in the States most of our lives, we do not have that determination. Even a lot of so-called socialists and communists and anarchists and whatever really do believe that the U.S. can't be thrown into the dustbin of history. That this imperialist system of oppression and exploitation is the only way that we will ever see life able to be lived. But a child in Palestine doesn't believe that. An elderly man who saw the Nakba, who was displaced in 48, he doesn't believe that. So how can we? I know I've spoken about this a couple times, but why do we feel we have the privilege to have failed? Why do we feel like we can write poems and write speeches and post and just say sorry? As if it means anything. As if your apology is not hollow. We all have far more opportunities every single day than we are willing to see and acknowledge, because those opportunities put in question the comfortability, the day-to-day experience, and the pleasantries that come with it that each of us have, even if they're very minimal. We don't take the opportunities or the risks to really do what needs to be done to organize, to talk to people, to build relationships, to educate ourselves, to educate others, to have real physical evidence of another world being possible. Because to do so, well, we can't spend our evening at home on the couch. And we can't spend our money on weed. And we can't, you know, worry about certain kinds of individual self-centered goals or objectives, right? We can't focus on our own betterment alone while we're also trying to focus on and help others. And for some of us, that's not worth it. But we have to remember that human beings have only been able to make it to this point because of whatever forms of cooperation or collectivity were able to be sustained. At a certain time, that collectivity was a free one that was necessary for survival. You know, each member in an indigenous nation, an indigenous civilization, would need to have some way in which they are participating and helping to not only sustain but improve the conditions of those around them. Because by doing so at this time, one would have had a different level of consciousness, a different level of experience and understanding that brought them to the conclusion that by doing these things to better those around me, by focusing my energy and participating in efforts that actually improve the conditions we all live in, not only are those around me going to see the benefits of that, but so am I. And it might seem selfish, but a lot of us are selfish. So if that's the way we have to motivate us, if that's the way we have to motivate ourselves, that's where we start. The benefits and the improvements and the evolution that we want to see in our own personal lives, as we've expressed on the show time and time again, is extremely difficult to attain through individual actions. You are up against a system. You are up against a structure which has thrown many a smarter, many a better, many a more prepared person into poverty and disillusion and alienation and addiction than you or I. Much smarter, more determined, more conscious people in the past have done everything in their power to try to petition, to try to legislate, to try to individually attain some kind of level of improvement. And yet, here we are. Poverty is higher than it's ever been. Inequality is higher than it's ever been. Child and, pregnant mothers' mortality rates is higher than it's ever been. The lack of education, the lack of resources, the lack of healthcare is more evident, more extreme than ever before. And it's coming home to roost in the nations that did this to the rest of the world. The austerity, the authoritarianism and dictatorship and the explicit forms of fascism, which are popping their heads out and even attaining state power all throughout Europe and North America and elsewhere, are all due to procedures, principles that they put in place. And we forget that fascism, dictatorship, is extremely useful for capitalism. Taking away the rights, taking away unions, taking away any kind of worker control, destroying the law, destroying any kind of power that we as workers, we as people have, just makes it so that each and every one of us has to sacrifice more of our time, more of our energy, more of our life to working these jobs. And of course, we're not the ones who are making the money from it. So anyways, as all of this is happening, you have millions of people in Palestine right now who their only option is to fight or to flee, if not to just die. And they are choosing, many of them, to fight. Some of them, for better or for worse, are also choosing to flee. But the Palestinian people will not bow down. The Arab peoples, not the rulers, not the leaders, the people, will not be cowed into subservience and submission anymore. You're seeing a real change in the world. And right now, there are many examples that, at the very least, are showing cracks. Cracks between the different ruling class factions. Cracks between certain tactics and strategies of the international ruling class. But you're also seeing cracks in the propaganda. Cracks in the ability to control the masses. People are having the light break through those gaps. And a lot of us are, becoming what we call activists or organizers for the first time. We don't have the experience the Palestinians do. And what history here we do have, we are completely disconnected from. In Palestine, for over 150 years, dating all the way back to the 1860s, when many of the first Jewish outside settlers began to come in from the Russian Tsarist nations who were persecuted, who had pogroms committed against them, were abused, were discriminated against, etc. In 1860, they started coming to Palestine, right? And there was already a population of Sephardic Jews in Palestine. There was a population of Arab Jews in Palestine, right? Who were very quickly How do I want to put this? This population was almost immediately forgotten by the rest of the world. And as forms of resistance through the late 1800s into the 1900s against Zionism, against settlements, against occupation began to form, of course, this idea that Arabs or Muslims, as if the whole Palestinian population is Muslim, just hate Jews. But Palestinians and much of what we call the Middle East has had thousands of years of experience, of tolerance, of civil war, of occupation, of resistance. They have class divisions within Palestine. They had internal struggles. They had periods of diplomatic, legislative, nonviolent attempts to stop the occupation. They had national, sentiment, nationalism come and develop in the 20s and 30s. They had the periodicals and the newspapers and the universities. We cannot forget that West Asia, Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, Yemen, Palestine, these are some of the oldest civilizations in human history. And the amount of knowledge, the amount of scholarship, the amount of study, the amount of research that was done by these peoples on the world is unmatched in Europe, is unmatched in North America. And so they destroy it. They also have thousands of years worth of experience of knowing how to struggle. The Palestinian people struggle as a people. It is clearly understood in the words, the sentiment, and the roles and responsibilities that individual Palestinians take on, that they understand they are a part of a whole. If they are not a resistance fighter, and they are not picking up the gun, and they are not participating in armed struggle, they are struggling in some other way. There are many young students who, before the war, that propaganda, before this genocide, who didn't have the opportunity at employment. pre-October 7th, the unemployment rate in Palestine was something like 48%. You had students who would go out into society, unpaid, to practice medicine, to teach kids, to do scientific studies, to, develop a political kids understand their role. When their families are killed, you have 6 and 7 year olds going out into the street selling pastries, selling bread, selling goods to make some kind of money to feed themselves. But also, those very same kids know why they are in that position, speak clearly about occupation and the way in which the state known as Israel has created the conditions, has created the siege of Gaza that forced people into these positions. They will speak about the way in which the United States, the British, the French, the Italians, the Portuguese, the Spanish, the Dutch, and others have actively supported Israel at as young as 6, 7, 8 years old. They will pray for the soul of their lost sibling or mother in perfect enunciation, like down to the T, on how these things are supposed to be done at 3 or 4. This is a people who is aware of what its role is for humanity. This is a people who understands that every single one of them has a responsibility to do something, to fight somehow. And while they sit preparing for the largest, most extreme part of this genocide, the world is watching. Where are the armies? Where are the militaries? Where's the force to stop this? We talk about a ceasefire. There will be no ceasefire. We talk about, you know, call your senator. Your senator doesn't have fuck all to do about this. Yeah, they're complicit. Yeah, they're supporting it. But look at Tlaib. Look at Ilhan Omar. Look at these individuals throughout history also who have struggled against oppression everywhere, even within the states. What happens to them? Do they change anything? Does anything improve? Or do they face the consequences as individuals for daring to stand up and say human life should not be desecrated? Human beings should not be enslaved. Human beings should not go hungry. Human beings should not be unable to provide and sustain life on Earth, where for thousands of years human beings have been able to sustain life without jobs, without careers, without capitalism. What reason would indigenous societies have to exist? Humanity, love for one another, respect, kinship, collectivity, and communalism. In Palestine, that is clear, that is evident, and that is still alive. So anybody who tells you that human beings are selfish naturally, that they are greedy, ask them, what about the Congolese? What about the Vietnamese? What about the Chinese? What about the North Koreans? What about the Colombians or the Sandinistas or the Bolivarians in Venezuela and Nicaragua? What about the Haitians? What about the Cherokee? What about the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota? What about the Haudenosaunee? Human beings, by nature, are some of the most selfless communal beings that there is. Unlike other living organisms, we cannot from birth sustain life. We need someone. We need someone's there to tend to us, to care for us, to teach us, to bring us up into the world, to prepare us for life. And many of our parents have been unable, incapable, or unwilling to do the real work to bring up kids, to bring up a generation which is prepared for struggle. This is not the case in Palestine. Although many parents around the world recognize that they would like and would want the opportunity to raise their children, to bring them up in a world where they can just be happy, where they can be free, where they can enjoy their childhood, the innocence and the purity of it. But there was a clip, I think I mentioned a couple episodes back, of a Sudanese man who had just had his son assassinated in his own home. And he said very clearly, if the government or the ruling class expects that I'm going to have another child and I'm going to raise them with love, I'm going to raise them with empathy, I'm going to raise them with compassion, I'm going to raise them with care, they are mistaken. If I'm so lucky to have another child, I will raise it with hate. I will raise it with vengeance. I will raise them with resistance. And I will raise them with a want for revenge. The same is clear in the clip of the young boy who comes from the house that was just destroyed, dust and blood all over him, who says, my mother and my sister have become martyrs. But Israel has just created for it a new Hamas soldier. They have just created the one who will stand on its throat and stomp out the light in its eyes. People everywhere are tired, are depressed, are poor, are exploited, are sad and pathetic beings who have no control over themselves, no control or understanding of who they are themselves, and certainly no control over the resources, the conditions, the politics, the social norms, the behaviors, and the structure of society at large. We have to understand that certain responses, certain behaviors, certain practices, although they seem logical, although they seem sound, upon further investigation, only harm us more. Things like individualized self-care, mass consumption, and resharing of traumatizing, disturbing, and upsetting images. Constantly consuming upsetting information. Isolation. And addiction. These things, yes, they make sense. Yes, the logic can be found there. But these things only continue to harm us more. Me sitting in my apartment right now, smoking weed, recording this, is not harming anyone except for myself and the time that I am wasting right now doing this, sitting at home. And again, I say all this not to criticize, not to condemn, not to harass anybody, but to just always and forever point out that I too, along with all of us, anyone who's listening to this, fail, make mistakes constantly. But I still have this drive to improve. I still have this want to improve. And I want to develop relationships with you all. I want to hear from every listener, every person who clicks on my program. I want your opinion, positive or negative. I want to hear what it is we can do together, what it is you're going through, what it is I can do to help you. I don't got no money, all right, first of all. So I've gotten a couple of requests before, people asking me for money. Please stop. I don't have money. I don't ask for donations. I don't have a Patreon. I have a minimum wage job at a fast food restaurant. That's it. I can't even afford to fix my car right now. It's about to die, and then I'm not going to just have a car. So anything but money, feel free to, you know, reach out. If you or anyone you know is in a predicament where they need some funds, they need some resources, they need some clothing, they need some kind of material, please, you know, reach out with, you know, those kinds of asks from an organizational standpoint, not an individual. I can't provide those things for you. However, I'm a part of organizations who might be willing and able to help in those ends if we have the means and information to do so. So lastly, I'll just say that, listen, folks, do what you got to do. You know, feel your feelings, go through the periods and patterns of consumption and depression and alienation, because I think for some of us, you know, it's only going to be the experiences that push us forward, not what somebody else says. But when these things start to feel hollow, when these things start to not feel any kind of pleasant anymore, please reach out. And please continue to reach out to others about what else you can be doing. And remember, folks, it's all love. You know, we're out here, we're struggling, we're all having a hard time. We can't be belittling one another. We can't be making it a good person competition. It's not about that. None of us are good people. How about that? We're all terrible, awful people who have been brought up in a terrible, awful world. Those of us who are good, who have goodness in us, are not better than others simply because of that. And especially if we do not act on it. We are human beings. Each of us has certain abilities, certain skills, certain talents, certain interests, certain ideas, certain behaviors, certain practices, certain patterns that allows us different opportunities because we all come from different realities, different conditions, and yet very similar realities and very similar conditions. So if you're organizing out here, if you're doing something, don't do that simply because you think it makes you a good person. Do it because it needs to be done. Do it because you can do it, and do it in a way that encourages others to do it. Not to feel good about themselves, although, hey, shit, we can't deny that's a reason why we do this. But more importantly than that, to feel good about taking the opportunity that you have at life, at existence, and not misusing that, not abusing that, not taking advantage or taking that for granted. Lastly, I will say Mumia Abu-Jamal is having a particularly hard time right now with his psoriasis, and he has actually unfortunately had to cut his last dread out due to irritation with his pair of nail clippers. Due to lockdowns and other things, he has not been able to get the exercise that is needed. He does not have the diet he needs for his heart condition, his health condition, excuse me. And again, he just needs to be released. I'm putting this call out here from the Bring Mumia Home Collective, but also just from, you know, people who have heard and know the story of Mumia Abu-Jamal, to please get involved however you can. About the people from The Spirit of Mandela has a docu, like a small special feature, 20 or so minutes, that we just released not too long ago called Who is Mumia? It has some interviews with some of his old neighbors, schoolmates. It has video footage of his old apartment and interview with the family living there now, their connection, the feeling that they get in the building. And it also has an interview with Bob Boyle, a movement lawyer, who explains the case, the history, and a bit of where it stands now with Judge Lucretia Jones, I believe her name was, denying a retrial to Mumia when six boxes of unused, unknown of evidence was found in the legal offices of the prosecution 40 years later. Evidence such as a note from one of the main witnesses that testified against Mumia asking the prosecution, "Where is my money?" And other such documents. So, Mumia, Leonard Peltier, Kamal Siddiqui, right? These are folks that are still here on the land of the living with us. We lost Sekou, we lost Mutulu, we lost Rochelle, we lost Verona, we lost Russell Maroon Schultz. We lost a lot of people in these last few months, and we're going to keep losing more. So before we do, we need to really up the level of engagement with the elders, with the folks who have been in the struggle, with the folks who are currently incarcerated, and the folks who have been recently let out. We have to take care of them, we have to love on them, and we have to show them that their sacrifices were not in vain by making sacrifices of our own. All power to the people, peace and love to Mumia, Leonard, Kamau, and all other political prisoners here on Turtle Island, in Palestine, and around the world. We stand with the political prisoners, we stand with the revolutionary movements, we stand with and salute the martyrs and resistance forces currently struggling for humanity around the globe, not just in Palestine. All power to them and all power to the people. Peace and love.